Hey friends, welcome back to the podcast. My name is Andy and we're talking about something that for me is really personal. So we're going to be talking today about engagement, like not the marriage kind, although that sounds like a lot of fun to talk about one day. Instead, we're talking about things that we engage in. Or for me, what I'm going to be talking about, things that I struggle to engage in. And here's the thing. We want to be really thinking about, while you listen to this podcast, things that God has called you to, but maybe you're really struggling to engage. I hope this episode is going to be 1, informative, 2, fun, and 3, really useful. So let's go. You're listening to Women Speaking Truth, a podcast that inspires women to know God deeper and equips them to take the next step in their God-given callings. My name is Andy Bruce, and I'm so passionate about helping women develop their character and understand their callings that I went out and got a doctorate degree in leadership. Now I'm sharing practical tools about leadership development through a biblical lens so that God can empower and ignite ordinary women like you and I to make His impact on our world. So, hey friends, we're just about in the holiday season. Anybody else getting energized or overwhelmed about that? For me, I was jazzed last night because I just sent out my first Halloween party text where friends and family gather on the driveway around a big fire pit with all kinds of candy and goodies. So I feel super jazzed. You know those little things where I know they're incidental, but man, for me, those are the things that really fill me up. Today, I want to share with you about things that don't fill me up and things I was a whole lot better at, like I wish I was a whole lot better at, but I am happy to say I've made a ton of traction and I want to share with you what those things are. So I'm going to talk about personally in the vein of leadership engagement. So here's what I want you to do for a moment. I want you to think about something that these days you are totally engaged in. What's something that these days you would say you're really engaged in? Like you're all in, you can't, there's evidence, serious evidence that you are committed or dedicated or jumped into something. For some of you guys, it might be a friendship or relationship that really has your attention. And maybe that friend's going through something tough and that's what's creating your engagement. Maybe that friend really needs something, or you're just having a really good time with that friend and you can see total engagement. It's not just in your mind, but it's actually enacted. Maybe for other people, it's your kids these days. That would be true for me. Like, and this is a switch for me. I was not fully engaged and the guilt I had. I was not fully engaged when my kids were in the little stage, but now I'm raising almost 3 teenagers. And man, this stage is super engaging to me. So I know that I'm engaged, and you can know if you're engaged. If your eyes are on that thing, your mind is on it, and your hands are in it. That's how you know you're engaged. So a couple things to keep in mind about what you're engaged in is, one, we can be engaged in really bad things. So don't ignore that. If you're like, I'm engaged in something right now because you know your eyes are on it, your mind is on it, and your hands are in it. So I don't know, there's this weird thing that we could think that our level of engagement can help determine your character. Not really true. Actually, not true at all. Instead, character is determined by what you're engaged in. Here's what I mean. If you're engaged in something that honors God, awesome. It totally reflects a lot about your character. But we all know that the opposite is true. There have been plenty of times for us, right, when we're totally engaged in things that so don't honor God. So our level of engagement doesn't determine our character. Instead, the thing that we're engaged in completely is a way better filter of what determines our character. Okay, so I asked you, think about something that you're really engaged in. I wish I could hear your answer. For me these days, I'm really engaged in the stage and the things and the learning of my kids. So I don't know if I've told you guys, but so I was a teacher for 5 years. Then transitions happened. I had children. I started to do women's ministry at my local church. That was a number of years ago. But I was so relieved to not be at home with my kids because, like I said earlier, those ages and stages, and honestly, my own brokenness and some things that were happening around me, it was a hard age for me to fully engage in. Now, if you were to peek inside my life at those times, it would look like engagement. And there were plenty of times where I was engaged, but that doesn't mean the same as what I wished it could mean of like full enjoyable engagement. Whereas right now, if you could peek inside my life or inside my mind, often I'm thinking about, ooh, I could do this interesting thing with this child. Oh, we should try that. Oh, here's what we're doing for our next family dinner. I need to start doing this to help this child who's at home learning these days. Like, I've got two kids that are technically homeschoolers, but they go to a hybrid school a couple days a week. If you peeked inside my mind, often you would find thoughts about what I could do to help learners, to make it more interesting, to do something fun, and you would see me doing those things. That's when you know you're engaged in something, is because your mind is on it, your eyes are on it, and your hand is in it. So it's easy to think maybe about what you're engaged in. Now, think about something that you're not engaged in that you wish you were more engaged in. So think about something that you're not engaged in, but you wish you were more engaged in. So for some people, it might be their relationship with God. This is a big one that I hear about a lot and I experience to some degree, kind of always wishing I were more engaged or the next step of engaged. This is one where I think women really resonate because of this weird expectation where they know they ought to be more engaged, but the reality is maybe it's just not happening. So I think many women, one, can experience that right now or can relate because they've experienced it so many times. Another one, my ministry partner, Melissa, she was just telling me about a woman who, man, she would say, I'm not engaged in relationships, like real relationships where people know me. And there's this giving and receiving. And maybe that's true for you. It's like, man, I just wish I had real friends. And on it could go, right? With work, with your spouse, with your children, with friendships, with even serving at your local church. Well, for me, oh my goodness, I have always, like as an adult, struggled with leadership engagement. So you've probably listened to this podcast a few times, and you probably know that when it comes to my personal, Andy Bruce's spiritual gifting, for me, that's leadership. And that means that there's never really been much of a time where I haven't been leading women in some way, form, or fashion. Because that is where I derive joy. It's super satisfying because it's how God's wired me. But here's the thing. Remember in the intro, I said this is going to get personal. For me, leadership has been a major issue when it comes to my personal disengagement. Yep, I know I just told you guys two different sides of the same coin where I'm like, oh my goodness, it's so fulfilling and it's what God's called me to. That would be one side of the coin. If you flip it over, holy Toledo, I wish my team were here. You would hear many moans and groans and like, yep, and chuckles because of how many times I've had a conversation where here's what we're talking about today. The thing that God has called you to, and you just wish you could be more engaged in it. That's what we're going to talk about. For me, I felt like, and I literally felt like Casper the Friendly Ghost. Remember Casper the Friendly Ghost? Because when it came to my personal leadership, I would ghost like crazy. It's like I was here today and gone tomorrow. And that was a pattern, here today and gone tomorrow. And for me, this ghosting came with a whole lot of bad, overwhelming feelings, primarily guilt. And second, this attitude of just wanting to avoid and hide. So let's break this down. So I'm going to talk about avoidant leadership, but whatever the thing is that maybe came to your mind, hopefully came to your mind, something that you wish you were not avoiding. When I use the word leadership, just sort of copy paste your word in here. So I'm going to use the word leadership. You plaster and paste your experience because maybe it's not leadership at all. Maybe yours is going to be avoidant friendship, avoidant responsibilities at home, avoidant relationship with your spouse, avoiding God. So let's talk about what this looks like. So avoidant leadership is when a leader really wants to achieve their objective without engaging with others. But here's the thing, in a way that doesn't draw a lot of attention to the avoidance. So here's what that means in real speak. I wanted all of the outcomes of me leading, you know, like Women Speaking Truth, this podcast or this online ministry or my friends or leading in a certain situation or leading as a mom. But mostly for me, it came with leading ministry, doing the thing that God's called me to do. And this avoidance would look like this. I wanted the outcomes that would be positive, that would be fruitful, that would be satisfying to not just me, but my team and those that I get to lead. But I couldn't engage in it. And so what I would do is seriously avoid. And here's what it looks like in real life. Ignoring, hiding, and avoiding. And the thing is, I didn't want to avoid or hide or ignore because it feels really like God had put me there for now. So the question is for us, what's going on and how do we fix it? That's what we're talking about today on the podcast. So friends, you've already heard me mention my ministry partner, and you might know her personally. I hope you do. Her name's Melissa Dunn. Her and I've been doing ministry together for, 12 or 13 years, although it feels like 40, right, Melissa? So I want to just pause here for a moment and point out my really good friend and ministry partner, Melissa Dunn. This chick loves to teach the Bible, and not just biblical concepts, but also these little tidbits and tips and ideas that are going to get you motivated to open your Bible and engage with it for maybe in ways that you haven't for a really long time. This week, she's going to be talking about a Bible reset, a way to think about your Bible reading. So maybe you've tried reading the Bible for a year, right? Like me, literally, I'm raising my hand right now. And maybe, probably, statistically, it just didn't work for you. That's where this idea of a Bible reset comes in mind. Go to youtube.com and search Melissa Dunn and the Bible. And you're going to see it probably pop up right away and look for this new video that's going to be released on Sunday. And this is all about a Bible reset, helping you love opening the Bible. Let's start with a few no-brainers. How do you know if you're avoiding? Okay. Easy, you hide from someone or something, obviously, right? But seriously, let's just unpack this for a minute. Hiding is a learned behavior that you used to have when you were a little kid, and it's what you use to keep yourself safe. Think about it. When you heard mom screaming in the kitchen, what did you do? You ran and you hid because you didn't want to be around something that was scary. How about this one? During a really loud and scary lightning and thunderstorm in the middle of the night, What did you do? You hid way under your covers because you didn't want to see it or face it. Guess what, my friends? We may be much, much, much older, but even as adults, I think we still do this same behavior. We still hide, but we shroud it in our task list. We don't do it under the covers or in our closet or under our bed anymore. We do it so stealthy in our relationships, in our responsibilities, in that stupid task list, and on and on and on this goes, right? When we don't know what to do and when we're scared, you guys, we still hide. Even though we're adults who are really proficient and efficient and nice people, and we know real deep down in our gut we shouldn't be hiding anymore, yet here we are hiding and avoiding and dodging and purposefully ignoring, which is the same thing as avoiding. And for me, this was a major pattern in my life. When things got dicey, I disappeared from my team. When I didn't know what to do, there was this overwhelming sense in me, just avoid it. Don't answer the texts. Don't look at Marco Polo's. Don't respond to emails or phone calls. Don't even open them. Don't even pick up the phone. Just avoid it and hope it goes away. But here's what I know, and I'm going to say a really obvious thing. Avoiding, hiding, dodging, these don't honor God, and obviously they don't honor God's people. Whenever you're ignoring and avoiding, it doesn't make the thing that you're avoiding and ignoring go away. Like, not at all. The thing just gets worse. Avoidance never makes the thing disappear. It just holds it off a bit longer because we're avoiding it. And in the meantime, oh, this gets so bad. While we're working so hard to avoid it, that thing grows horns. It gets mean and nasty, and it kind of like festers, meaning those relationships, the task that feels like Mount Everest in your mind, it's not going to get better as you ignore it. Instead, while you're ignoring it, it just becomes more urgent and the need that it to take care of it. Here's what else I've realized big time. And again, I know this is obvious, but it's so worth just verbalizing. Avoiding, hiding, and dodging simply lead to guilt. Like for me, mega guilt. Because I know more than anyone else that I'm purposely sidestepping what God's given me, or that person, or that responsibility. So this makes me ask a few questions. What is wrong with me? Why can't I just do the thing, like answer the text or start it? How do I get back in the game? What can I make? Oh, this is such a good one. What can I make up so that she thinks I'm more engaged than I really am? Or, oh my gosh, this is awful, but it's real. So I'm just going to say it. This is when you know you're desperate. I hope I get sick, so at least I have a good reason to dodge, avoid, and hide from whatever the thing is. And then there's this one. There's this one I want to talk about for the rest of our time. Why don't I care about, and then fill in the blank. Why don't I care about this right now? I do care about it outside of this moment of time. Why can't I act and do what I want to do to demonstrate how much I actually care about it, but instead I'm hiding from it? And so, of course, there's lots of guilt, lots of pretending, lots of avoiding responsibility and people. And you desperately start to think, okay, maybe if I try praying harder and praying longer, maybe that will change my heart. My friends, maybe it will, maybe it won't for me, because God does, that's not the issue for me. That was never the issue. And so that's not going to be the solution. Or I tried to start thinking this one. Okay, today I'm going to just do it. Everything on my task list and everything on my people list, and just get it all done so I don't have to think about this anymore. And I rush through my people or task list. For me, it's typically avoiding people, or at least it used to be, and do a crummy half job just to get it done. But just because I've gotten a couple things off my task list doesn't mean I'm facing the thing. Yeah, I'm telling you, I've been the queen at this avoiding behavior. It's like I know it top to bottom, in and out. that's why I want to share with you this, I guess we'll call it this activity that I have learned to develop a few years ago when I was finally at the end of my rope, particularly because the guilt was overwhelming. But you know what? What I think was even more overwhelming was, okay, Andy, you're getting stuck in your head. You've got to find a system that lets this work its way down through you and out of you. So that's what I'm going to share is this little PDF. You're going to find it in the notes for free. Listen, if you want to look at it right now, if you're somewhere folding laundry or somewhere where you could download that, if you're visual, look at it. If not, like, hang with me. I'm going to walk you through. There's 5 parts to this re-engaging exercise. That's literally what I call it, is leadership avoidance re-engagement. Okay, so these 5 parts are this. Stage 1 is prayer. Stage 2 is vision. Stage 3 are obstacles. Stage 4 is implementation. And stage 5 is staying engaged. Let me walk you through really briefly what this means. And here's what I would say. Have a filter as you listen to about the next 10 minutes of this content. Because if you are like me, I'd be listening to something like this and go, I have no intention of ever downloading and doing this PDF. Or I know I'm going to forget about it before I even, you know, before my life gets rolling here. I'm just going to forget to do that. No sweat. I want to give you instead a filter to listen through. I'm going to walk through some questions that are under each of these parts. Choose one, just one, that maybe as soon as this podcast is done, or even in the midst of this podcast, you just stop, pause, and just chew on the question for a minute. I'm telling you, these questions are game changers. And I've shared this document with other leaders where they're like, I don't know what to do. Not only is this helpful if there's disengagement, but it's super helpful if there's a lack of clarity on what God's called you to. And for me, cat out of the bag, that has been hands down the reason for my disengagement. It's not because I didn't care. That wasn't true. It felt like I didn't care, but that wasn't the crux of the issue. It's not that I was like too busy. Nope, not the thing. That was an excuse I plastered on it to justify to myself my own behavior for avoiding. And it's not that I wished it away. I didn't. This ministry, that's by the way where all of my avoidance goes toward, this ministry is what I felt God called to, and I'm super passionate about it. The reason why I avoided is a lack of clarity. And so that's what this PDF is going to walk you through. So let's start with stage 1, prayer. I know that sounds too simple, but for me, this one is a game changer for me. In stage 1, I have this in a Google Doc. I'll pull it up. I'll put the date at the very top and sort of just 2 or 3 key words that tell me what it is I'm talking about. What is the engagement issue? In stage 1, because it's on my laptop, I will literally go through and word for word write my prayer to God. Like, I'm going to give you one. So this is mine. Stage 1 is prayer. And here is literally an example of what I wrote. Lord, I am so glad that I am your forever daughter. I don't have to wonder ever about my future or my result. I will be with you forever, forever yours. What hope, peace, and confidence this gives me. You, oh God, are my portion and my vision forever. And then I start getting into the crux. As my group looks at abiding, I see how prone I am to think of it as a light switch that I turn on and off based on my behavior. I'm not sure this is how you see it, though. You say, abide in me and I in you. Because I am in Christ, I'm already abiding in you. You are my true vine. This occurred in my salvation. Now I'm free to live in the truth of abiding, and I want to be a woman who abides. Even when I'm on new terrain, like I am these days, and then I have in parentheses, this season is so strange. It calls for a new way of abiding. I want to be a woman who abides and doesn't use a new season and lack of experience as an excuse for not abiding. Is this what I've done, God? Maybe sometimes. I think the other part is pure old-fashioned ignorance. I just don't know how to move toward you when I compare where I used to be, as if that's your expectation of me, and attempt to go back there. Instead, I think I need to realize that you aren't expecting me to return to where I used to be, and neither should I. Because of the beauty of intimacy in that previous season, I so naturally want to return there. Instead, I ask you, Lord, to teach me, how do I abide today? Being here in that specific place certainly helps. Time helps. A small group that talks about the struggle and the desire helps. I'm so grateful for these things. God, as I think through this pattern where I continually trip on the same rock of leadership avoidance, I'm asking you for help. I think I understand the behavior. Avoidance of anything leadership-based because I'm already so confused. So I avoid emails, texts, phone calls, preparing for meetings, for work, etc., because my lack of clarity feels already like I'm defeated. As I back away through avoidance, the task seems even more daunting. ... You know, on and on I go. And then I end like this. Thank you for the fact that I will not be weak forever. Only this fallen world has produced weakness. But heaven will be filled with the strength and splendor of Jesus. I can't wait to realize who you truly are, who I truly am, and be the body of Christ that you've truly intended. So for me, this stage one of prayer is literally just processing to God, to Jesus. And for me, I process really well in writing. And this, it gives me a chance to start with my heart and pour it all out before God. That's stage one. Stage two is vision. My first question in this exercise is really simple, but just because it's simple does not make it easy. Here's the question. What is the crystal clear vision? Don't overthink it. You may not have it memorized. You may not have it formalized. It doesn't matter. Don't go bonkers on this one. But even now, if you have something in your mind that you're avoiding, what is the crystal clear vision for that thing? It could be like for me, raising kids. My crystal clear vision is raising kids that when they leave our house, they love Jesus. And when they start their own house, they bring Jesus there. Crystal clear vision. Crystal clear. For me with ministry, the crystal clear vision is transformative environments. We want places, whether it's online, in person, Melissa or I, or both of us teaching somewhere, or even just our tiny little team gathered like we did Sunday night on my back deck around a little table talking. We want to be transformed because God is there. We want to be so prayed up, so with Jesus, so having heard from him that his spirit just can't help but pour out as we ask, as we fast, as we pray. This is the crystal clear vision, is that God's presence would be so with us that he transforms women in whatever environment we're in. So for you, what's the crystal clear vision? Write it down or know it. And by the way, this has taken years to construct and years to gain so much clarity. If you've got a super duper duper long vision, I would say pump the brakes on that. The reason being, it's really hard to remember in these types of environment or when you're talking with your team. It should be able to roll off your tongue without much effort. And not just you and not just your team, but even people that you're serving, that they've heard it enough times because it's easy to hear and it's easy to catch on and it's easy for anybody to repeat. That's when you know you've got the magic vision. So what's the crystal clear vision? That's stage number two. The second part to what's the vision is this question. Why is it important? Like really, this isn't rocket science, nor is it like a quick test. But sometimes this is going to have facets to it. And for you, with whatever the avoidance might be, for whatever the thing you're avoiding is, why does it matter? Who wins if it's achieved and who loses if it's not achieved. So go back to me these days. I was saying that what I could tell, because there's evidence around me, is I'm zoned in. I'm locked in on what my kids are feeling, what they're doing, what they're thinking, my plans for our family dinners, ways to have fun, being like, oh, I'm going to do an ice cream bar, and pre-thinking those things. Man, I know I'm locked in. My crystal clear vision is that my kids would love Jesus in this house, and when they have love of him when they leave this house, and when they have their own house, that they would bring Jesus to that house. That's a crystal clear vision, and I know exactly why it's important. The way to think about why it's important is who wins if it's achieved and who loses if it is not achieved. So for me with my kids, oh my goodness, does it make the rubber meet the road when I think about if this vision is not achieved. If my kids leave their house or leave our house and they're like, eh, Jesus, Christianity, not a big deal. Whoa, like it makes the vision crystal clear when we could put some filters on it, on who wins if it's achieved, who doesn't win if it's not achieved. All of that about the vision was stage two. Okay, recap. Stage one is prayer. Stage two is vision. What's the crystal clear vision and who wins if it's achieved and who doesn't win or who loses if it's not achieved? So now let's go to stage three. And I do this, by the way, all in one sitting. Sometimes I set a timer for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and I'm like, I'm just going to get as far as I can. Often for me, because I process this way, that's all I need. It's just 15 minutes of gaining clarity. And that's what this does for me. Stage three, obstacles. Obstacles. Okay, so remember, there's something we're avoiding. We did stage one, praying and sort of confessing that, bringing God into it, gaining God's perspective of it. That's what I'm writing in stage one, prayer. Stage two, for that particular issue, it could be my marriage, my family, my relationships, feeling lonely and feeling like I don't really have people. And then, or it's like for me, most often leadership driven. What are the obstacles? Meaning, what's the thing I'm avoiding? Here's a question. What obstacles stand between where I am and what I'm hoping to achieve or what needs to get done? That's it. What's the obstacle that is from where I am right now and what needs to get done or what I'm hoping to achieve? So for me, I have some categories under this. One is me. That's a category. One is Melissa, because she's my ministry partner. And another one is the women that God has put around Truth Groups or Bible Lab or whatever the thing is Melissa and I are working on at the time. Almost always for me, the obstacle is me. It's what I emotionally am stubbing my toe on. And it's usually this answer: confusion about what I'm doing, what I'm supposed to do, how it's going to look. That's what I'm avoiding. Confusion that leads to disengagement. Now, several years ago, Melissa and I have talked about this on multiple platforms like YouTube and the podcast previously. Several years ago, and for a while, the obstacle that stood between where I was and where I felt like God was calling us was our lack of really accepting each other. So that's a major question. What are the obstacles that stand between where you are right now and what you're hoping to achieve? For me, when it comes to my family, since that's where my eyes are on, that's what's on my mind a lot, and that's what my hands are into. An obstacle when it comes to my kids these days is simply time. So it could be just that simple. What's the obstacle for you with whatever maybe you're avoiding? Maybe there's a relationship. Maybe there's an issue that you and your spouse just sort of don't get into. What's the obstacle that stands between where you are right now and what you're hoping to achieve? And there's just a little subpart. How can that obstacle be addressed? For me, I'm going to read what is on my list that I'm using as an example the last time I did this. I wrote this. My obstacles are the ones that will slow me down the most. Intentional reflection. And for that, time is needed. Without this, without that intentional reflection, I get terribly lost in the details. I lose sight of the big picture and I feel like I'm failing. Therefore, I disengage. Well, how can that obstacle be addressed? My action step was two things. One, schedule 2 hours of reflection per week. Now, FYI, this was from a while ago. I don't need that, meaning those 2 hours are not on my schedule right now because I don't need that much time. Instead, I understand exactly what I need. I need time with my team dialoguing about content ideas. That is what I need. So for in this example, it was one, schedule 2 hours of reflection per week, and I did that. Well, rather often I did it, I knew exactly based on my disengagement when I wasn't scheduling those couple hours. When I would schedule those hours, I was highly engaged because for me, the confusion, I don't know what to do, and overthinking it stopped me in my tracks and created disengagement. Step four, implementation. What are two or three things that matter most for successful implementation? For me, I knew it. I've already said, by the time I got to stage four, all I have written is implementing 2 hours of reflection time per week. Then, literally right there, I started doing it. Okay, I'm going to have a plan for how to spend those 2 hours. And that was a fun experiment for me is I'm going to go somewhere really interesting to me, not in my house and not somewhere normal for me. And for me, I know where those spots are. Then I'm going to walk through. Before I got there, I was going to commit to my calendar to not schedule things tightly around. However, those 2 hours broke up. That was my strategy. So for you, when it comes to implementation, what's the basic strategy? There's one more, stage five, staying engaged. Staying engaged. Where am I most likely to disengage from the process in a couple days or a couple weeks and why? So how do I stay engaged? Because now I have a little strategy in steps 2, 3, and 4, essentially. I've already got my strategy. Stage five, I'm looking forward just a bit. And I'm looking at where am I going to disengage soon? And I could tell you, when I've been really, really honest with myself, I knew if my disengagement was going to come a couple hours later. So, okay, if I know that's coming, then I plan for it. I call Melissa. I pick up my phone and I Marco Polo my team. I knew what to do just to keep me engaged. Or if it's going to be in a couple days from now, it's like, okay, I'm going to schedule lunch with somebody that matters and helps keep me engaged. Or if it's a couple weeks from now, then I could look at a schedule and start scheduling in 2 weeks where I know, if I'm honest, I know when disengagement's going to happen because I know myself really well. So for this question of staying engaged, where am I most likely to disengage in the future and why? Here's what my answer was. I will disengage from the process without Melissa providing clear direction for me. I only see the big picture and I'm unable to translate that into steps and categories. But when I meet with Melissa, bring her this problem and talk about these categories, she is the one that always helps me take big picture and put it into small steps that are doable. Then I also put a busy schedule equals disengagement. And finally, a lack of clear responsibility equals disengagement. So these are the 5 steps. The first for me is prayer. The second is vision. What's the crystal clear vision? Who wins if it's done? Who loses if it's not done? Number 3, obstacles. What obstacles stand from where I am right now and what I'm hoping to achieve? And then how can those obstacles be addressed just right now? It doesn't have to be a grand, huge plan, just right now. Step 4 is implementation. What are two or three things that matter most for successfully implementing the plan? And the simpler these couple things are, way more likely. What doesn't work, my friends, is if the solution is a giant, huge new process or huge new structure. Nope. What's the baby step that you could take right now that's going to engage you? And finally, stage five, staying engaged. Where am I most likely to disengage in just a little bit, whether that's 2 hours from now or 2 weeks from now? And what can I do to pre-plan for that? So that is my own personal thing, just as a leader or as a friend or in my marriage or with my kids, where it's like, these are all things God's called me to. And man, can there be my own baggage that gets in the way, causing me to disengage or already feel defeated with the thing? These are five steps to take. There's a free PDF. Look for it. Thanks, gang. I can't wait until we get to do this again next week.